Well, tonight, it's integrity. That's what we're going to be sharing on, leadership as it relates to integrity. Got it tested this afternoon. I was playing handball, which is nothing unusual, but I decided I got to have one last time before I get this foot operated on to go and play handball. So it was this afternoon, and I was playing with one of the guys in my Bible study, and a wild Italian like Kevin DeFelice, you know, who flies all over the court and does everything. And one shot came up, and after I hit it, I couldn't tell for sure whether it was on my wrist. And if you need to play handball, a wrist ball, yeah, do it. But the problem is I have some lining gloves that kind of go up above, and it's hard to tell where. And I thought, oh, it was probably okay. And I thought, wait a minute, I'm talking on integrity tonight. If I'd grabbed the ball and stopped, hey, listen, you know, and I went on like that. Terrible what these things do to you. I mean, they actually make you think about all this stuff. Mark Twain was giving a lecture one time, and he's giving a speech on honesty, and he told this story. He says, when I was a small boy, I was walking along the street, and I saw a cart of watermelons being sold. And he said, so when the guy was tending it, wasn't looking, I just snitched one and dropped around the corner, broke it open, sank my teeth into it, and he says, this funny, strange feeling came over me as I went back and got a ripe one. Or another little story about a businessman who was talking about integrity. He said, now let me tell you about integrity. He says, one time a guy came in and paid his bill with a $100 bill, which was fine. Well, after he left, I discovered that there were two $100 bills stuck together. He says, that was when integrity started to come out. He says, should I or should I not tell my partner? But you know, in spite of those and probably many other little twists on honesty and integrity, it's not a joke. It really is a big deal. And it's what every person wants in the people that they do business with or who they know and have to work with in their life. And the thing is that almost everybody that you would ask would say, yes, I'm a man of integrity. I'm a woman of integrity. I really do live up to a certain standard. I've never had anybody tell me face to face I'm a liar, cheat, and thief. I mean, they just don't do that. Now, they may be. And a person may lie to your face, but still think they have integrity. And the issue with integrity is, it's strange. You can't just have some integrity. It's kind of an on and off switch. You either do or you don't. Someone says it's very important to tell the truth because when you lie, it's hard to remember what lie you told, you know, what the circumstances were. Now, today, ethics and integrity are buzzwords at every business, every educational institution, every MBA program, almost everywhere has a chair of ethics. Out here at the Air Force Academy, they've got a character development curriculum that deals with ethics. The Naval Academy has the same. Even the institutions that are known to have some of the highest levels of integrity are having problems today. And what's more, integrity is being enforced in the corporate world more than it ever has in the past. In the Air Force in particularly, there is a tremendously high level of enforced integrity, especially in the part of the Air Force that I deal with, which was the acquisition community, that is the buying of new weapon systems and new equipment and all of that. You cannot even hardly take a pencil. If you go out to a contractor, they cannot buy you a meal. And a contractor must provide a way for you to pay for your own meal. We have a stack of ethical regulations about that thick. In fact, we were held accountable to it before it was even published. And I'll tell you, I saw three generals fired just because there was a possibility. Last Friday night, I was down at Tinker Air Force Base, and a general who had been in the job for 2 months was fired on Friday night, for conduct unbecoming an officer. And he had, I spoke to someone today who knew the man very well. And it was just like that. He was taken off. I had occasion, the commander of Strategic Air Command, General Lee Butler, so impressed me in a speech he gave. I go to some of these places and I just fall asleep, you know, just like some of you may do tonight. But the fact, you know, I just kind of thought, I can't keep waiting. This guy spoke, no notes, no nothing, just bang, he said some stuff was really good. So I called him up and I said, listen, I really like what you said about the future of the world and where it's going. Would you meet with my executive team? And he gave us a whole morning. And he didn't let anybody else meet with him. It was just Donald, Jim, Paul, and I, and him, sitting back in Omaha. And one thing he told us, there were many things he told us, but he didn't even want any of his staff listening for that. He said when he came to that command, he had a lieutenant general, 3-star general, who he found out had a mistress in several places. He put the OSI, the Office of Special Investigation, on it. Within a couple of weeks, he called the guy in and said, you have two choices. You either resign or I'll court-martial you. And boy, did that send a message. I could tell you thing after thing that has happened. Well, let me tell you about an interview I had. When I came into a general officer's position in the Air Force, it was a total surprise to them and to me. But a friend that I'd been witnessing to for 25 years, out of the blue, called me when I was thinking I was serving my last active duty tour and asked what I was doing. And he said, well, I'm calling you to ask if you'd stay on active duty or in active reserves for a while longer and come and do this. And I told him no. Well, he says, please come over and at least meet my commander. And so I did. And it turned out that he hired me. But I'm sure in the eyes of the Air Force Reserve, they didn't even know who I was. It was kind of out of the blue. So I got this call from General Roger Scheer, who was the chief of the Air Force Reserves, who I had met. No, I had not ever met him. Hardly knew who he was. He wanted me to come back, and he wanted to interview me. And so I got on an airplane, only went in. You know, I flew back to the Pentagon for 1 hour, or for maybe 20 minutes. That's about how long the interview, because he wanted to talk to me. It was interesting what he started off with. He said, now, White, he says, are you sleeping around with anybody other than your wife or doing some other stupid thing that would bring discredit on the Air Force? Now, think about that. I said, no. You always have got to have a wiseacre in the audience. That's a problem with people who have been on the Navigator staff more than 10 years. I said, no, sir. Just a year ago, the 4-star general that I worked for came into the command. We had the change of command ceremonies. He sent all the colonels out and kept only the generals in the room. And he gave us a lecture on several things. One was on ethics and so forth. And he said, now, by the way, I want to tell you something. And I've had 2 4-stars that have given similar speeches. If you are having an affair with anybody other than your wife, And there were only men in the audience in that particular time. I want to tell you something. He says, you will be caught and you will be kicked out. It says, first of all, if you're so stupid as to do something like that, at least have the courage to turn in your resignation so you don't bring discredit on the Air Force. Now, I run into this all the time. I have seen more than one person in just the last 3 months fired as a result of some of these things. In the corporate world today, in the military world, it's basically a no-tolerance situation on sexual harassment, on other items of integrity, and it goes on and on and on. Integrity is a big thing today. Certainly, we ought to be people who think in the same way. We ought to be people where integrity is so big. And you say, well, Jerry, we're Christians. I happen to know, and you do too, that many non-Christians and many other Christians do not want to do business with other Christians because they can't trust them. One of my best friends, my best high school friend, we were involved in Youth for Christ together, and he designed, by the way, all the communication systems for Focus on the Family and been involved in that. He had his own company and he was a partner. His partner, he got ill and was really ill. He had a near death and a surgical situation for a better part of a year. And when he got well again, he had an agreement on the company, and his partner basically cheated him out of a large, large amount of money. And he had all the documentation he could have sued. I was just with him over Labor Day. I said, what'd you do? He said, I won't do it. He said, I'd rather lose the money than to do it. I could win. But he says, instead, he knows he did wrong. And so he's helping him set up an international aspect of their company. And he'd just come back from Romania. And he said, my heart's in missions and seeing God use us in a missions. And I don't want to mess it up with that kind of thing. But I run into that many, many times. It is a big issue. At the end of World War II, General Omar Bradley said this, we have grasped the mystery of the atom and rejected the Sermon on the Mount. The world has achieved brilliance without wisdom, power without conscience. Ours is a world of nuclear giants and ethical infants. I also want to say that I don't think this integrity is coming out of people's hearts. It's coming because there is law. And it's coming out of fear. So integrity comes from many places. By the way, a key verse here is Proverbs 10:9. The man of integrity walks securely, but he who takes crooked paths will be found out. Will. Proverbs 10:9. So, first of all, integrity is an issue of the heart. It has to do with motives. It has to do with the way that we think and what goes on inside us. There will be two key verses that I'd like to have you really think about tonight. You've memorized both of them. One is Psalm 78:72. He shepherded them according to the integrity of what? His heart. And guided them with skillfulness of hands. So integrity is first an issue of the heart. It's an issue of motives. But secondly, it's an issue of our actions. It has to do with the example that we set. Albert Schweitzer, I don't quote too many times. I've only got two quotes that I use from him, but here's one. He says, example is not the main thing in influencing others. It is the only thing. And then I found an interesting illustration that goes back some time. There was an evangelist by the name of Herb Tyler. Herb Tyler, in one of his evangelistic meetings, had given a sermon on integrity. And this was in the time when you went to a payphone, you know, you put in this stuff and an operator would intercept it and so forth. So he placed the call, identified himself, and then when he hung up, all of his money came back after he'd made the call. And so he dialed the operator and said, "Ma'am, I don't know whether you're the person that just took my call, but all my coins came back." And she said, "I know. I was in your audience tonight when you spoke on integrity, and I wondered if you practiced what you preached. So I pushed the button that returned your coins." How do you like that? He made an appointment with her, and she came to Christ, as she shared with him. I mean, we think that no one sees the little lapses, but they do. And then, finally, in this little sequence, integrity is an issue of others' perceptions, which has to do with credibility. It's interesting, too, and I'll come back to this a little bit later. Talking about a little credibility. At Cape Canaveral, on July 28th, 1962, which was just a month after I left there, they launched the first Mariner 1 space probe, which was to go to Venus. And 13 minutes into the flight, a booster engine was to go on, and it would accelerate it up to about 25,000 miles per hour. Then in 44 minutes later, something in the neighborhood of 9,800 solar cells would unfold, and 80 days later, it would calculate the final course correction and send it for 100 days later to Venus. However, as happened several times as I observed down there, 4 minutes into the flight, it went up like this, and exactly 4 minutes into the flight, it went and turned and went straight into the ocean and crashed. A thorough analysis afterwards found out that in one of the equations, a minus sign had been put in where a plus sign was supposed to be. And they lost $12 million by one small mistake. I think that integrity is like that. Ecclesiastes 10:1, which you know also, "Dead flies make a perfumer's oil stink. So does a little foolishness." So a little foolishness is weightier than wisdom and honor. We don't have very many second chances in this particular area of our lives. And we need to understand that and need to take it to heart. So let's talk about the basic foundations of integrity. First of all, and I'll leave this up later, but let me just, you can copy down a few of them if you wish. Here are some synonyms for integrity: honesty, virtue, honor, morality, principled, uprightness, righteousness, godliness, wholeness, soundness, sincere. And that's quite a character list. This is all an issue of character. And so each one of those, if we wanted to, we could go down through them and discuss them. Honor, that's a big issue. Virtue, and so forth. But just to show that these are synonyms for integrity. But I would like to now talk with you a little bit about what I call the currency of integrity. Everything that we do has a certain kind of currency. You think of currency being money. But there's a currency of obligation. There's a currency of relationship. You can think of currencies of what it is that allows you to purchase certain things. There's a currency of integrity. And the first of those, and perhaps one of the most important, now I'm sorry, I am ahead of myself. I had my slides out of order here. Just a moment. I could do it backwards, but I don't think I made up a slide on that. Let me just look here. No, it's not there. Let me give it to you verbally. I thought I had a slide on that. I'd like to talk about the focus of integrity for a moment before I get to the currency of integrity, because the focus is how we look at it. That is, where does integrity come out in our lives? First of all, is there's integrity with God. See, God knows our heart. So it's not an issue of his not knowing. It's an issue of an honest, upright relationship with God. And we'll talk a little more about that later. Secondly, there is the integrity with your family. See, they see you for who you really are. They know when you blow up. They know when you've lied. They know when you have not treated them well. They know how you treat your husband or your wife. They hear you talk about other people. And, you know, people don't think your kids hear, but they really do. It's very interesting if you look at Proverbs 20, verse 7. It says, "A righteous man who walks in his integrity, how blessed are his sons after him." There is a promise to a man and woman of integrity to their children, to their family. And then there's integrity with the staff. Integrity with the staff. And the main issue there is credibility. And I've got a little quote out of a book called The Leadership Challenge. And here's what it says about credibility. It says, "Credibility is one of the hardest attributes to learn, and it is the most fragile of human qualities. It is earned minute by minute, hour by hour, month by month, year by year. But it can be lost in very short order if not attended to. We are willing to forgive a few minor transgressions, slip of the tongue, a misspoken word, a careless act. But there comes a time when enough is enough. And when leaders have used up all their credibility, they will find that it is nearly impossible to earn it back." Credibility is one of the greatest bank accounts you have. And we probably ought to talk about it. And maybe in the Q&A we can talk about credibility a little bit, because it relates also to trust. And I have a couple more thoughts on it. And then for us, there is credibility with our donors. Those people who support us in our ministry. And this speaks to issues of lifestyle. And it speaks to how we use our time and our effectiveness. There's one sentence in the staff letter that is being mailed, it's being printed today, I think, as I mentioned last night. I wrestled with that I don't know how long. I don't know how many iterations I went through on one sentence in, I think it was the third paragraph. And I finally decided not to say what I really wanted to say. But I'm going to tell you. Okay? The issue has to do with what we do as a navigator staff person who is full-time. And the thing I point out in there is that most of the people we work with have a pretty demanding schedule. And if they're going to have a quiet time, they do it between 5 and 6 in the morning. And when they do Bible study, they do it between 7 at night and midnight. And they take their Saturdays. And what I wanted to say was this, and I didn't quite say it. You can now interpret what I actually did say. And the problem was, is I just felt that it could be possibly misunderstood or felt like I was mandating something on someone. But basically I want to say, why don't we live by the same thing? You know, to have the privilege of having a leisurely quiet time with coffee at 9 o'clock and doing a little Bible study from 11 to 12 and this, that. You know, we don't have too many people that check in on us. We don't have a time clock. We don't have a supervisor ask you what you're doing. But and I think that you see how that could come across, could come across a little tough. But I want to say that there is a credibility to the people we're with of the disciplines we put on ourselves. Then there's an issue of integrity with our donors as to whether what we are doing is really useful. I don't like the word productive, but does it something that really takes us being full time to do? I could name a person, and if I'm careful here, I can do it without naming the person. But if one person who once was on our staff just felt that he could do everything that he would do full time and still work at a full time job because everything was just in the evening and on weekends and whatever, and so he very quickly became frustrated being full time in the NAB ministry and subsequently left staff. And it was true; he was a person of capacity. And he really, he said he was just bored the rest of the time. Now, there's a personality issue involved in this because there are things to be done and ways to function. Particularly in the community ministry, I've talked to some who have a difficult time because there's such a limited amount of time that you can actually be with the people. And if you have family, I mean, it's not an easy situation. But suffice it to say that we have an integrity issue with our donors and those who support us, and an obligation that we are disciplined and we use our time well. You can see why I didn't say that in the letter, because it could easily be misunderstood. The other issue we want to focus of integrity is integrity with the lost. And the lost have a picture of who we are. And a lot of that picture, they hold us to a higher standard. I've got one of the guys I play handball with, and he's not a believer. He won't come to my Bible study. We've been trying to study John for the last 4 years, and we haven't gotten beyond chapter 1 yet. But we have lots of conversations with him. So every time I call a hinder or calls a little questionable, he'll look up and he'll point like this. I mean, it just... And then I've got my Jewish guy, Stanley. And Stanley has an interesting mouth. And he's funny as anything. He's a retired doctor. And he just gets so far. He says, listen, can't I swear just a little bit, he says, in the court. And he goes on like that. But the fact is, we have a higher standard on a lot of things with the lost. And you know it says that in 1 Timothy 3:7, that about overseers, he must have a good reputation with those outside the church so that he may not fall into reproach and the condemnation of the devil. Our reputation with outsiders is very important. And it's largely perception. It's not fact most of the time. Okay, now let's go on to currency and talk about that. Okay, the currency of integrity has to do with your word, that we give our word. And James 5:12, it says, let your yea be yea, or yes be yes, and your no, no, or you will be condemned. One of the earliest lessons in this happened to me in 1961. And Rusty, why don't you just leave the room? This is an anti-Navy story. Okay? Okay, right. But it was something that made such a deep impression on me and actually affected some of the ways I thought for a long time to come. We were in the midst of testing a Polaris missile. It was when the early Polaris was being developed. And a sub was out doing a dry run. And it was in the middle of the night. And I was the mission controller at that point in time. And I was only a first lieutenant. And the test director was a full commander, equivalent of a lieutenant colonel. And they, you know, this business of holding is just a habit of that. I mean, that's just life when you're doing testing. So they kept having problems. And I had other tests that were backed up behind it that had to have the equipment and had to have all of this stuff. Well, he kept saying, oh, we're going to have it in 15 minutes. No, we'll have it fixed in 30 minutes. And and this went on for almost 3 hours. What he didn't know is that we could monitor their communications. And we knew that they couldn't fix it at all. And he lied to me. He was lying to me constantly. Because once they could fix it. And finally, after something, I don't know, it was about 2 o'clock in the morning, I kicked him off the range. I said, fine, I'm shutting you down. Now, this has to do with the authority you have when you're in a particular position. So I shut him down, and he got so mad. And the next morning, you know, and he had some words for me as a young officer, and we ended up in the commander's office and with the situation, and the commander supported me. But what it did was cause me to not only mistrust him, who I had to deal with on a regular basis, but it caused me to distrust the Navy as to whether they were going to shoot straight with us because we were testing everybody's thing. So here is one person's actions who tends to color everything for his whole service. See, our word is very important. And we need to be sure that we do keep our word in every situation. It says in Proverbs 6:16 through 19, there are 6 things the Lord hates, 7 that are detestable to him. Haughty eyes, a lying tongue, hands that shed innocent blood, and so forth. Now, you know where I find this as a problem in the navigators? It has to do with confrontations between people. Now, I know we don't purposely set out to lie, but here's what happens. You're in a confrontation. Things are said. Feelings are hurt. There's some misunderstandings. Okay, and later on, it's a mess. And so Dave Legg and Don and others are called in to mediate these conflicts. And then often you have some private session. Well, he said this and he said this, and boy, I tell you, this was it. Then you get them together and the stories don't match. And some people just forget somehow what they actually said. Or really are afraid to say what they might have said to someone else in private in criticizing someone else. And I have done, and you have too, enough of those kind of interventions to know that there are some issues of integrity involved as to what the facts of a particular situation may be. And not just perception. I'm talking about facts. What was really said. And often, that's why we need to guard our lips in private. Let no communication proceed out of your mouth, but that which is good to the use of edifying. If we can't say it to the person directly, ought we to say it privately? So the issue of integrity in your word is not just that I lie, but it's how we interact with people. Do I keep my word? If I say I'm going to do something, do I actually follow through with it? The second currency of integrity is your money. You know, all of us are responsible for how we use our money, how we spend it, how we think about it, the lifestyle we live. And we can be, the amount of money doesn't matter much. It has to do with the way we think about it. And there's no question that we live by some different standards than others will. So just the whole issue of money. I don't need to talk much about that. The next has to do with your motives. The motives that we have. And by the way, Only you know your motives. And I battle this. I remember sometime ago, it was when Walt Hendrickson was leaving the Navigators. And I was trying to convince him not to leave the Navigators. Now, it was actually a little before that in one of the conversations with him. I had a conflict of some sort, and I don't need to go into the details of the conflict. And there had been some conversations that had taken place. Some things had gotten back to him of what I had said. And you know how that happens. So here we are walking around the island out here. And Walt said to me, "Jerry, you're just trying to cover your tail." And boy, that hit me. And it really caused me to say, is that what I was doing? Was I really speaking fully the truth about this particular circumstance? Because I had said some things. I think it was taken beyond what I had said in terms of some actions that resulted. I was a regional director at the time. And it had gotten back to Walt. It had to do with his activities. And I really felt uncomfortable, I'll tell you, because I was mixed. And I don't think my motives were right. And to some degree, I was just covering my tail, as he said. And he confronted me on it. And any of us who are involved in making decisions, whether it be in one of the offices, whether it has to be a call that comes in and we have a conversation with a staff person, whether it be in a field situation, where we're having to make decisions and deal with something, we make some mistakes. We say things that we should not probably say or whatever it may be. And then we are held accountable. Something happens where that thing blows up in our face. And it's very easy then to get some mixed motives. For instance, it's easy for us to try and defend ourselves and not admit that we just made a mistake and said we were wrong. One of the criticisms that came up about the Navigators through the years, and this was a criticism, Terry, you can help me a little on this because I think you and I have talked about this. But it was when I've talked to some staff out there, some people that have left staff, says, well, this has to do with how we handle people and when we do things to them that aren't very godly, or at least in their eyes, and we mishandle them. They said, you know, all the Navigators do is just they'll never admit that they're wrong. Never admit that we really made some bad mistakes personnel-wise. And just say, well, you just live under the sovereignty of God. God is sovereign. And, you know, to some degree, that was true. You remember some conversations on this, Terry? And so one thing, I hope that we're doing better. And I know when I go out and talk to people, I've talked to some people and just said, I'm sorry we did this. And I want to apologize for the fact that we made mistakes. And publicly, in a number of situations, particularly with staff, and I said, we have made some very serious errors in times. And sometimes it wasn't with the best of motives. Sometimes it was just, I don't know, to get the mission done or to show that we were in charge. And I can remember times that I was under pressure to do certain things, and I didn't feel good about it. I didn't feel it was right to do it. So this whole business of integrity in our heart and our motives, it just gets very, very confusing. And we need to face up to these things. For instance, the whole issue of Ananias and Sapphira was an issue not of giving, but of what? Motive. They hid it. They wanted to pretend that it looked one way and actually to have it in a different. So it was an issue of the heart and the motives. Another currency of integrity is just our faithfulness. Our faithfulness, you know, who you are when no one is looking. the passage, you know, he that is faithful in little will be given much. We preach that a lot. But we really need to be faithful to do that which we say we're going to do, to follow through on what we say we're going to do. It is, for me, when I function either in the secular realm or in the navigator realm, I tell people, I say one of my highest values is that you keep your word, you do what you say you're going to do, and that once we've agreed, then nobody, I don't have to come and check up on you. I just know it can be done. And we just need to nurture that, not out of fear or something strange, but just out of a conviction before God. Oh, by the way, motives. Let me tell you a situation that really was an interesting test on my personal motives and my prejudices a year ago. About a year and a half ago it was. I had to hire for my reserve function. I have an office with an executive officer, a colonel, who is full-time in the Air Force, and with that office they administer all of the reserve functions in our command. The man who had the job was a believer, and he understood what I did, and, you know, it was really a neat deal. And so it was really comfortable. Well, he got selected for another position, and so we had to leave that job, and I had to hire somebody else. And I got three folders that came in of people who were available, two men and a woman. And the woman was Jewish. And I got to thinking, oh, you know, do I really want someone who's Jewish? You know, who doesn't understand a thing about what I'm doing. I can't even talk about this. And I went over the folders, I called and did the references, and without question, she was the most qualified. But I want to say that I struggled. Inside, there was another one that would have been very comfortable for me to have hired. And I hired this colonel, who was a Jew. And she's done a marvelous job. I mean, she has just done beautifully. She's never dropped a thing. But I had an issue of motive that I had to wrestle with. And the thing is, no one except me would ever have known, because I had total freedom to make the choice without consulting with one person. And I think there are lots of little decisions like that, and that we are faced with even in our ministry. The last thing on this list is just and I've already referred to it, is just our personal lifestyle and the way we conduct ourselves. I don't mean just money. I mean just the way we function, how we talk. About the same time as I had this interaction with this Navy commander, down at Cape Canaveral, Billy Graham had a one-night crusade on the flight line at Patrick Air Force Base. And I was in charge of the follow-up. But I also had the privilege of escorting the team. In fact, one of my prized little pictures is in Central Control, briefing Billy and his team and all of that. And that's where I first met Charlie Riggs. One of the people on the setup team, name not to be mentioned, in fact, I can't remember his name, as we were walking down the hall one time, we were going down like this, and a very attractive woman walked by, and he went, and you know what that did to me as a young person? It just, something happened in my respect. I said, that isn't right. I mean, he may have thought it, and he may have wrestled with it, but to do that outwardly was wrong. And it caused me to think of how I am observed in almost any situation. So just the way we live. And of course, it's the whole thing is based, the foundation of all this integrity has to do with your personal relationship with God. See, only God can make us sensitive to these issues in our lives, life. Now let's talk for a minute then about, this is the currency of integrity. Let me talk for a bit on what I just call, for lack of a better term, some of the core issues of integrity. The first of these has to do with our conscience. And this is the other verse that I want to leave with you tonight. Acts 24:16. And herein do I strive to always have a conscience void of offense toward God and toward man. And then Psalm 78:72, he guided them with integrity of heart. I call conscience the inner gauge of integrity. We need to listen to our conscience. And I won't go into a detailed discussion of conscience because it is not always reliable. It can be perverted, it can be seared, there's so many things that can happen. But when the Spirit-anointed conscience gives us a gauge, see, you may be able to do something that I'm not able to do, or vice versa, by your conscience. You may be able to spend money in this way, and I don't feel like I can. Or, do you see what I mean? We've got differences about it, but God is going to speak to us. And he's going to put his finger on certain issues. Back to our word. I call that the voice of integrity. In Psalm 15, 2-4, he whose walk is blameless, and who does what is righteous, who speaks the truth from his heart, and has no slander on his tongue, who does his neighbor no wrong, and casts no slur on his fellow man, who despises a vile man, but honors those who fear the Lord, and this phrase now, and who keeps his oath, even when it hurts. That's that phrase in the other versions, swears to his own hurt. He keeps his oath, even when it hurts. And I've already spoken enough on that. The other thing about a core issue of integrity is how we trust and think about other people. And I call this the spirit of integrity. Tuesday in my Bible study, we studied James 2. Poor man comes into your assembly and he's just got rags on, and so you kind of go, sit over here. Then another man comes in, he has a gold ring. And you say, oh, come, sit up here. And then James really lights into us in that regard. Say, does this face us? Sure it does. How do you look at people who are not very gifted? Or who really aren't very socially smooth? Who kind of embarrass you? Or how do you look upon a person who's a key donor? Do you treat that donor differently? Listen, I wrestle with that all the time. I every time I get involved with a, quote, major donor, I have to think, now, why am I doing this? And would I do this for someone else? I have several people that I know, one of whom I have in mind very clearly, who used to be a very large donor to the Navigators. And a very good friend. And he lost everything. And for 20 years, he has never recovered it. He cannot afford to come to the president's conferences. We invite him every year. I've called him and I said, I will pay your way. But he still has never come. And they have went through the bottom. Think anybody calls him anymore? No. I mean, what do we do in situations like that? I mean, we're tested. And we need to really think about that. I would not want Lauren Libby's job for anything, to be honest with you, because there are issues that, and he and I have talked on this before. I mean, because you are dealing with large donors, and we do some things that are special for them. But it is not an easy thing to come to grips with, for the fact that we may treat certain people differently. Now, there is another little side to this. You remember Paul, when he went back to Jerusalem, what did he do? He met with certain people privately. Who were they? It says, people of reputation, for what reason? So that just to make sure that he was not off base and they were people of influence. So as I've studied the word, I do see where you can't, it's impossible to treat every person alike. Okay, so I've said, okay, that's it. I know that. But what I want to say is, in your heart of hearts, how do you think about the various individuals? As it is always, when you grow up around the ministry, you have some people that just irritate you. You'd rather not be around them. I mean, because they just bug you. And yet, they came out of our ministry. And so I think we have this obligation to really minister to them and to include them in things and just take that risk. So it's just a test of how we treat people. I used several illustrations last night about my friend Bud Pontaine, who had cerebral palsy, so I won't do that again. There was an interesting... Let's see, where's my time? Okay, we're in good shape. Just tell you a little story. You know who David Augsburger is? You know, he wrote a book, The Forgiveness, 70 Times 7, and he's written several interesting things. He told in one of his books about a young lieutenant by the name of John Blanchard, and he was in basic training in Florida during World War II, and he wandered into the library and found a book to read, and as he worked through it, he became very impressed, not with the content of the book, as the penciled notes in the margin in very feminine handwriting, and it showed inner insight and understanding and tenderness. And he went to the front of the book and found the name of the woman. It was a Miss Hollis Maynell. He did some research, found her address in New York, and instituted a correspondence. And it really became apparent that they were falling in love long distance. So the day came when they were to meet, and they arranged to meet in Grand Central Station at 7 p.m. on a particular night. She said, "You'll recognize me by the red rose I'll be wearing on my lapel." 1 minute till 7, he straightened his uniform and he watched people as they walked toward him. And here was Blanchard's own words. He says, "A young woman was coming toward me. Her figure was tall and slim. Her blonde hair lay back in curls from her delicate ears. Her eyes were blue as flowers. Her lips and chin had a gentle firmness. In her pale green suit, she was like springtime come alive. And I started toward her, entirely failing to recognize she was not wearing a rose." And as I moved toward her, she kind of smiled at him and said, "Going my way, soldier." And then he said, "I saw Hollis Maynell. She was standing directly behind the girl. And it was a woman well past 40, had graying hair tucked under a worn hat. She was more than plump. Her thick ankled feet were thrust into low-heeled shoes. But she wore a red rose on the rumpled brown lapel of her coat. And the girl in the green suit was walking quickly away." And so he said, "I just felt like I was split in two." He said, "I wanted to follow this other girl, but here was this girl with the rose." And he had this little copy of the book, which was going to identify him to her. So she finally says, he squared his shoulders, and I went out and held the book out to the women, choked by bitterness and disappointment. He says, "I'm Lieutenant John Blanchard, and you must be Miss Maynell. I'm so glad you could come to meet me here. May I take you to dinner?" And the woman's face smiled, and she says, "I don't know what all this is about, son. But the young lady in the green suit who just went by, she begged me to wear this rose on my coat." And she said, if you were to ask me out to dinner, I should tell you that she's waiting for you in the big restaurant across the street. She said it was some kind of test. So, you know, how do you treat people? And I could tell you many other stories of things. Another one that I've already talked about is use of money and lifestyle, which I call the crucible of integrity. In Nehemiah 5, 14 through 19, Nehemiah is very quick to say, you know, I did not use the governor's allowance. I fed this many people every night. And he says, my God, remember me for what I've done. And remember, he repeated that several times in Nehemiah. He took it out of his own hide, so to speak. And in Proverbs 28, verse 6, it says, better is a poor man who walks in his integrity than he who is crooked, though he be rich. And then in 2 Corinthians 2:17, it says, unlike so many, we do not peddle the word of God for profit. On the contrary, in Christ, we speak before God with sincerity, like men sent from God. We do need to think about that. And the last one that I'm going to share, and then we're going to close this out, is perceptions of integrity, or what I call the reputation of integrity. This has to do, again, with credibility and trust. In Titus 2:7, in everything, set them an example by doing what is good. In your teaching, show integrity and seriousness. Somehow, we need to build credibility and trust. We need to be people who can be trusted and who earn credibility. Andrew Bonar wrote this, a holy Christian life is made up of a number of small things, little words, not eloquent sermons, little deeds, not miracles of battle, the avoidance of little evils, little inconsistencies, little weaknesses, little follies, and indulgence of the flesh. These make up the victories of a holy life. You know, integrity is our most precious possession, aside from Christ. But it has to flow out of our life with God. It is both a character trait, but it is also a discipline. Because you see, what you build into your life, you do by discipline. And you learn to act with integrity. In early 1967, one of the most tragic events in the space world happened. There were three astronauts on the pad at Cape Kennedy, and they were conducting a ground test of Apollo 1. And that would put the first man on the moon. At 6:31 p.m. in the evening, the technicians in the control room heard this brief announcement. We've got a fire in the cockpit. And there was a white flash. And Grissom, Chafee, and White were killed instantly in an all-oxygen environment. Now, the fact is that NASA at that time had instituted what was called a zero defects program. You remember hearing about that? Zero defects. We've had that in many places. And it applied to all contractors and subcontractors on Apollo 1. And after the investigation, after the fire, it revealed that not only had every company fallen short of that standard, but each company had made design decisions that made a dangerous situation deadly. And it was found that when that spacecraft was tested, it had over 100 what they call open items, that is, unresolved technical issues. And it was a component that could not stand up to the test, to the heat, the pressure, the speed, or the vibration that it would be subjected to in space flight. But there was so much pressure to get it done that they went ahead, and three men died instantly because people did not have integrity. And I remember that investigation. There had been, and even by the way, with the Challenger flight, there was an engineer that did everything but throw himself off the bridge to say, this is not a safe flight. There are things that are wrong. That O-ring, they went back and found out that the O-ring had been identified as a weak point in that whole thing. I would say to us that as representatives of Jesus Christ, that integrity in everything that we do, whether it be administratively, whether it be in our fundraising, in the way we live, the word we say, the relationships with our staff, what we say and how we do it, that we live a life of integrity. And I would like to, again tonight, give you a little thing to remind you about this. And the passages that I had mentioned were Acts 24:16 and Psalm 78:72. And these passages are the ones that would be it. Now, if you could just help me pass those out, would you? What I'm doing is I'm asking them to pass out two washers. And the reason I chose these, some things that are small. For guys, you know, you're always carrying junk in your pocket. At least for a week or so, do me a favor and carry these in your pocket. Now, ladies, I don't know where you carry your stuff. I know where Mary does because I can never find anything in it, in the purse. But, you know, you might even take that little piece of blue cloth and take a little thread and hook them to it. But one of these represents integrity. The word integrity derives its meaning from integral or wholeness. It actually can be a mathematical term. It means completeness. When you get married, they always tell the story about the ring, that it's complete and whole and pure and unbroken. And this represents integrity. I'd like the other lock washer to represent broken integrity. It's not complete. And just have it there. Just to kind of carry in your pocket. You reach in for the coins and it's just there for a little while to remind you to think about integrity. Now I'll give you an assignment. What am I going to give you tomorrow night? I'll just leave that with you. Okay? That's it.